BBC Five Live.
This is Up All Night on Five Live. I'm Dotton Adebayo. Coming up in this hour, well, we'll open up the phone lines now for our tech phone-in. If you'd like to join in the conversation, then do feel free to give us a call on 08085 909693. 08085 909693. You can, of course, text us on 850 58 or email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. As we're talking about techie kind of things, you will know all about that. So, as ever, we're joined by our gadget detective, Fevzi Turkal. You can get hold of him at Gadget Detective online and otherwise. And if you'd like to put any questions to him about the issues that you've got of a techie nature, which are to do with whether it be a television, a telephone, a computer, or otherwise, you get the drift. Any technique, or even techie kind of issues. Hey, Fevzi, good morning. Good morning.
Morning to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks very much. So, lots to talk about, first of all. And I know that you want to talk about a few things of your own. Just let me remind listeners that the number to call is 0808 590 693. You've got a gadget of the week for us. What is it?
I do. It's an expansion card from a company called Transcend.
Expansion card? What's that?
Yeah. Okay, so let me explain. So first of all, company's called Transcend, but it's T-R-A-N-S-C-E-N-D, just if you try and look it up.
Yeah.
So if you're an owner of a MacBook computer, you might find that you've had it for a few years. It's you're starting to think about, oh, well, whether I should upgrade it or not. They're not very easy to upgrade, except for the fact that some of the MacBooks, some of the MacBook Airs and some of the MacBook Pros have got a little card slot in it. You know, typically the sort of cards you take from a SD card from a camera or something like that. And it's just used to transfer pictures. But what Transcend have done is they've created something called the Jet Drive Lite. And what it does is it fits into that slot, but it, unlike a normal card that sort of sticks out, this one sits flush. It's made for each specific model. So you buy the one for your particular computer. It sits completely flush and it expands the internal memory. So you can either have an extra 64 gigabytes, 128 gigabytes, even 256 gigabytes. So it means one of these cards could effectively double the internal storage. And people finding that's quite useful because they're running out of space. Things like the iTunes library itself tends to expand.
You have
a large library of podcasts or whatever, or just large photo library. It's a really nice way of expanding a MacBook without it sort of being a sticky out card that can get snapped off or taken out and lost. It's in there, you know, it would take your sort of fingernail to pop it out sort of thing. It's kind of hard to get out once it's gone in, and that's how it's designed to be. And it's a very, very neat bespoke solution for each
you're
model.
You're saying very, very, just the way Donald Trump does it, which makes me think, hang on a second, just hang on one flipping second.
I'm sorry, Dawson, I've never had to say I resent that before on the radio.
I was hoping you would. Now, hang on a second. Exactly. Well, look, over the years, and since computers became part of our household furniture, I have bought so-called expansion cards of one form or another, and then found out that actually it's diminishing returns, because basically computers leap to another generation. And if you go and try and update your computer to try and make it work more, you're actually slipping behind in terms of where you should be with a computer, which needs regular updates because it needs more and more memory to incorporate all the things that, you know, we now have to have with our computers and so on. So whereas once upon a time, my first computer had something like 20 megabyte hard drive, I kid you not, and sort of 4 megabyte random access memory.
It wasn't punch paper tape.
Yeah, it probably was in those days compared to now. That cost me £1,000 in those days, by the way. Yeah. It's not a joke business. But then, you know, you kept sort of trying to expand it and buying expansion cards or whatever to make it work quicker. And what I didn't realize was everybody else was saving up their money to buy the next generation of computers, which would take it where those expansion cards were taking it in any case.
Yeah, look, you're right, but that sort of change actually works to your advantage. Think about it this way. Let's say you bought a MacBook Air back in 2011, At that time, the maximum size of internal storage on the hard drive for the SSD that you could have had was 256 gigabytes. That was, you know, if you paid top whack, so that might, you might have paid, say, £2,000 for that machine. It's physically sound. It's still sleek. It's likely to be working without, you know, without a fault. You know, they were very robustly built, and a nicer keyboard than a lot of the modern MacBook Airs, by the way. But 256 gigabytes. Now, you could say, okay, well, it's, you know, 5-6 years old, time to get another one. Or you could spend somewhere between £40 and £150. So if you spent, say, £150, you could double that internal storage to 256 gigabytes. It's not going to be quite as quick as the internal solid state drive. But to be honest with you, if your operating system is on still on the original SSD, the original solid state drive, this is a very useful way to store other data, be it photos or videos or, as I say, your iTunes library, whatever it is. And you don't really, you'd have to sort of do a benchmark to notice the difference in the real world. The reality is that you've given that machine a midlife kick, so it'll go maybe another year or 2 years or 3 years with that extra capacity that you've given it.
Okay.
Yes, it's not going to be faster than it was before, but it will be more useful.
Okay. I normally would not take issue with Fevzi. Everybody knows that, okay, because he is the gadget detective, whereas I'm just a numpty when it comes to technological stuff. However, on this one occasion, seeing he had the hump about me suggesting that he was like Donald Trump, on this one occasion, I'm going to throw it out there. I want something. No, on this one occasion only, I'm going to throw it out there to all you geeks listening, and I'm sorry, everybody else, but this one is for the geeks in particular, because they're the ones who will know what I mean. Come on, let me know on 0808 5909 693, would you save your money for a new generation of computers, or are you one of these Luddites who believes what Fevzi is saying about expansion cards giving your computer a midlife lease of life? Go on, you tell me. 0808 5909 693.
Okay, can I just
go on,
say...
Oh, you're going to back out of it now.
No, go on, back out of it. I'm not.
I'm sticking to my guns, mate.
You could well put your £40, £90 or £150 towards a new MacBook, but you're going to be waiting a long time for a new... That might go some way towards the insurance on a new MacBook.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to leave it to the geeks listening to give me a call on that, 0808 5909 693, and of course everybody else can join in as well by giving Fevzi a call and asking him to solve out any issues that you have with your techie gear and everything. Don't worry, Fevzi, it'll be all right. It'll be all right on the night. Trust me about this. There's a question from Stephen Hampshire who says, what's the best laptop on the market for around £500, please? And this is for work, not for play.
Okay, well, it depends what you want. It's a bit like saying what's the best car on the market for a certain. It depends what you need, what you desire
of
it.
Can you get a car for 500 quid?
Actually, you can get a car for 500, not necessarily a new one.
Exactly. You got me back.
Just say a new
one. You got
one.
Me back.
I'll give you a change on £500. Let's maybe look at giving you some tips. So I'm assuming we're looking at a Windows machine, so it will have Windows 10 on it. I'll give you some ideas of the specifications that you could maybe expect for your money. So in terms of the processor, if we're talking about, for example, an Intel processor, you'd be talking about typically an Intel i5 processor. I think for 500 you could avoid the i3s, which are nice but a little bit slower. In terms of the amount of memory, you'd be looking at, I'd say these days, a minimum of 8 gigabytes of memory, and ideally choose a machine that has got expandability. So this is tricky, because if you're after one of the sort of ultra lightweight ones, then they tend to have the memory soldered onto the main circuit board, not always but usually. However, if you can find one that is upgradable, then ideally one that's got at least 8 gigabytes in it but is expandable to, say, 16.
Expandable, he had to get that in, didn't he?
Yes, and one that has a slot in the side of it. So in terms of that, now as importantly as the amount of memory, the fact is that these days you don't want to be buying a laptop with a conventional hard drive in it. That's to say one that has a rotating disk inside it, because they are slower. They maybe have a slightly higher capacity still, but they are slower.
And how can you tell, out of interest, do you have to switch it on and hear the whirring noise, or can you just ask, does it have a...
You'd look at the specification. It would typically, if it's got a solid state drive, it wouldn't normally say SSD or solid state drive. Get one with a solid state drive with a minimum of 250 or 256 gigabytes of storage. And that's really the minimum that you want to be looking at in terms of having enough space for your operating system and most of your files as well. So that SSD makes such a big difference, especially for a laptop computer. It's first of all much, much faster. Secondly, more robust, because there's no moving parts. If it gets dropped or nudged, it's more likely to survive. Thirdly, because there are no moving parts, it draws less power, which means that the battery lasts longer per charge. And because it's drawing less power, it means there's less heat, which is a good thing, and therefore less noise as well. So, you know, all round important, especially in a laptop computer or a notebook computer, to have a solid state drive. So those are the main thrusts I would be looking for. If, for example, you were interested in gaming, and by gaming I mean sort of the latest sort of 3D games, the ones that are graphically very demanding, then instead of getting a laptop that just relies upon the built-in graphics chip on the Intel i5 processor, you could get one with an additional graphics circuit built in there. And that's for people who, as I say, want to do a little bit more than sort of basic games on there. So it does depend, and that's what I was alluding to at the beginning, is, you know, it depends what you need. Depends what you want to do with it. If you're looking for office applications, you know, spreadsheets, word processors, that sort of thing, you don't need a sort of add-on processor built in.
Yeah, but Stephen Hampshire said quite clearly, is this for work reasons? He hasn't got the time to waste around playing all those computer games.
So then the other issue...
He's a big boy now.
Yeah, so then the other issues to consider is, what sort of screen size do you want? Obviously, the smaller the screen size, let's say 13-inch or thereabouts-inch screen, that makes the machine more portable, because not only is the screen smaller, but everything is smaller. It tends to be a smaller, lighter machine. Uh-huh. If you go up to, say, a 15 or 15.6-inch screen size, that's going to add, you know, a good half a kilo to a kilo to the weight of the machine. Mm-hmm. But it will make the screen more usable. And some people do rely upon the screen that's built in. Others say, look, it's very important that it's a lightweight machine that I can use on the go, but at the same time, when I'm at my office, I'm just going to plug it into a large, you know, 27-inch monitor or something like that, and then have the best of both worlds. So those are the things to consider. What screen size do I need? Does it need to be lightweight and thin?
What'd you go for? I mean, considering the...
£500, I would look at something like some of the Dell Inspiron computers. They're quite good. Some of the Asus computers are very well built as well. Some of the HPs, and notice I say some of, because all these manufacturers can make some remarkably good computers, and they all have computers in their range which are not as good. But if you kind of stick to the principles that I've laid out for you, and the only other thing I'd say is try to get a balanced specification. And by that I mean, don't sink all the money into the sort of best whiz-bang i7 processor at the expense of the others. A computer is only as fast as its weakest link. So the idea is to have a sort of spread the money across all those components in a way that none of them is an obvious bottleneck to the speed and reliability of your computer. And the only other thing I would say is, you know, consider if there is a cost-effective way of getting yourself an extended warranty, you know, maybe taking 1 year up to 3 years without, if it doesn't cost you a lot extra, especially if it's for business use, because then, you know, you may write off a computer for tax purposes over a three-year period. So it would be good to know that it's going to be a viable computer over a three-year period. I bought a washing machine the other day, I paid extra for the one that had a 10-year warranty on it, because although it cost me extra, I then know I can effectively write off that washing machine, you know, in terms of my cost, not for tax but for cost. I can write that off over, say, a 10-year period instead of a 5-year period. I know, you know, all things being equal, that machine should survive the 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 0808 590 9693. Where are all my geeks when I want them? 0808.
There's no one coming to your aid here.
08085.
Can I say I've missed you so?
I've missed you too. And we started back again exactly where we left off, you might have noticed.
Which is arguing. You started it. I was going to be
sure
nice.
I'm not sure about feuding, but arguing and having differences of opinion, of course.
I wouldn't dignify it with the expression argument. I mean, you know, frankly, it's a bit embarrassing the way that you've gone at it, but, you know, I'll go with it, Dawson.
Let's put it this way. When it comes to technology and questions of a techie nature, there are different ways of skinning cat, so to speak, as it were. And, you know, people have differences of opinion. But anyway, the difference of opinion that I have with Fevzi tonight is I still think you're better off waiting your time and investing in a new generation computer than trying to crank the midlife crisis out of an old computer by expanding it, putting it all these expanding, what do you call them? Expanding what?
That's an expansion card.
Expansion cards.
I think there's there is a point at which that becomes absolutely true. You know, and I say that often when people have got a machine that's broken down and do you want to be throwing good money at that? And often I'll say to someone, you know, don't spend more than £50 to £75 on a repair. If it goes up, say above 100, better off putting that towards a new computer, even if the new one costs you £300 or £400. So there is a point, but I think particularly with the MacBooks, there are no cheap MacBooks. You know, they're all expensive. I mean, all right, you get a lot, you know, build quality and so forth for your money. But in a way, for a lot of people, you know, if you're not after the, you don't need the highest spec.
Yeah,
a 5-6-year-old machine will still run a current operating system, and it still looks the part, and it's still well built. And what's the point of getting a machine that's really well built and lasts forever if you're going to replace it every couple of years?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But you know, so I'm talking about if you're
still
spending
still something of a U-turn, but it's a good
if
point.
You're, it's a question of where your argument starts to take hold. Okay. I would say your argument starts to take hold if you were starting to spend £250, £300 or more. Because then that is just, you know, some proportion of a new MacBook. But if you're spending tens or a hundred odd pounds on an expansion card, that's just not going to get you very far towards a new machine.
Fair enough.
And even if you buy the new machine, it can be worth, you know, giving the old one a bump and, you know, passing that on to a family member or just using it as a secondary machine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very environmentally sound of you, frankly, Dotton, to tell people just to trash their machine.
That's a low blow, by the way. That was such a low blow. Anyway.
So I'm sorry, you started with Donald Trump. I mean, you know, how.
08085 909 693. Give Fevzi a call, please, and be on my side when you do. Chris in Bath, on the question of MacBooks. He's saying, yeah, tech guy's totally right. If you buy, say, a Dell that is bog standard, it works well. If you buy one with an unusual property such as Ultra HD, you get loads of problems for that privilege. Okay. Also, this is from Travis, who says, on the question of MacBooks, I bought a £2,000 MacBook Pro in February last year. How long will Apple support it for with updates?
Well, so it's a question of how long it will continue to be able to run the latest operating system.
Yeah.
There are, say, 2010 Macs still running quite happily. So I would say you should be able to expect maybe 6 or 7 years of updates to a machine if you've bought wisely and you've bought one with enough memory. Often what happens is sometimes it's not that it won't run the operating system, but even if it does, you know, by the time you're running the operating system and the applications on top of that you want, the performance isn't as great as you'd like it to be. I think that there's more of a problem when it comes to Apple equipment with the iOS devices, the iPhones and the iPads. They can become obsolete more quickly. It's possible to have a 3-year-old iOS device that, you know, struggles to run the latest operating system. Mm-hmm. And that is a problem because you don't get the security updates. And, you know, the case in point is actually someone on my Twitter feed said this only a few hours ago. They said, look, I've been holding off putting iOS 11 on my iPhone because, frankly, it's got a lot of bugs in it. But now I'm worried because of this vulnerability that's been reported on recently called Crack, where they've found out that the way in which we secure a Wi-Fi connection, something called WPA2, which is meant to be very secure, has got an intrinsic fault in it. That means that it's possible that that fault can be used to allow people access to the data flow, the wireless data flow between you and your router or you and your Wi-Fi hotspot when you're out and about. And they've said, look, Fevzi, you've said to us, don't go to iOS 11 yet, let them sort out a few more of the bugs. And I'd say yes. But today I read that Apple have patched for this Crack problem. That's Crack with a K. But I believe that they've only done so on the latest beta version of iOS 11. And whether we're going to get that patch for the iPhones and iPads that are stuck on iOS 10 or even iOS 9 is not clear to me. Okay. So
Hold the thought.
So the short answer is 6 or 7 years. Haven't given you the long answer.
The question was actually from Craig in La Rochelle in France. We've got John in Brighton with us there. Good morning, John.
All right, Don, we spoke before, Geezer. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Been better if I was talking too well.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. It was. It's good to speak to you in any case. Tell me what you've got for Fevzi, though.
Right. I'm thinking of buying myself a new mobile phone, Fevzi. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't see, and basically I want to be able to use, get one that, well, with a reasonable price amount of data on it. What is the best one for me to go for? At the moment, I'm on this little £10 thing. You know, you get the ones for £10 and they do just the texting and the silly little games and what have you.
But they do the job, don't they?
Yeah, they do the job. But if you want to save numbers and you can't see Dotton, and you don't know what you're doing with the damn thing, you can be pretty screwed up unless you've got audio on it.
I got you.
Okay. So John... Thanks for the question, by the way, because I think that's going to be a useful question for a lot of people. There are essentially two ways that you can go at this. You either get a simple non-smartphone that has real buttons that you can feel your way through and is simple and is therefore relatively simple to use. One that has buttons to call people, memory buttons to call the people that you want, one that maybe has got an SOS button on the back, that sort of thing. Simple, cheap, easy to use. Some of the best phones of that type are made by a specialist company called Doro. That's D-O-R-O. And their phones...
D-O-R-O?
Yeah, Doro. I think they're Swedish, but they specialize in phones either for older people or people with sight problems as well.
Yeah.
So, and those phones, you can either buy them online, but you can actually buy them in high street stores as well. So, not necessarily widely stocked by the phone shops themselves, but department stores are never knowing undersold, for example, carry them. Others carry them as well. So that's one approach. They do smartphones as well, but they're probably best known for their what they call feature phones, i.e. non-smartphones. So that's one way you can go. And there are many makes and many good ones, but the Doro people, they tend to specialize in that sort of thing. The alternative is to go, as you've alluded to, for a smartphone which has what are known as accessibility options. So, all right, you might not be able to see the large screen, but these are effectively handheld computers that also happen to make phone calls. And you can, so if you get an iPhone, for example, it'll have voice commands in it under a system known as Siri, and you can ask Siri to dial telephone numbers for you.
Whatever you want.
And it's very easy on those devices. If you just swipe down with two fingers, it just reads you the contents of the screen. Yeah.
It just tells you, you know, if you want to download certain things, you click one on one.
So you'll tell it to open an app. You can do that by voice. You can swipe down and have it read what's on the screen, and that could be an article, but it could just be the various options on the screen as well. These accessibility options exist both on Apple devices, but also similar options on ones running Google's Android operating system. Those are phones.
I like the sound of this.
So these are phones sold by lots of other people. So the Apple stuff is So, okay, this is a matter of opinion, okay, and others will disagree with this. Both are good. In my view, the Apple accessibility options are a little bit better. And I also am being told this by people who have sight loss. That people generally find it better, but most things can be achieved just about as well on Google-based phones, that's to say Android-based phones.
I'll tell you why I'm asking this. I'm also a keen radio enthusiast.
Yeah.
So it means that I'll be able, hopefully, I'm hoping to be able to, I've got two radios already, but on the internet, obviously, if those two radios are very quiet and the propagation is not in in its rightful state,
yeah,
it'd be good to be able to use those other frequencies as well.
Yeah.
On the internet.
So we're talking about, you know, broadcast radio stations, yes?
I'm a radio amateur.
Oh, okay. So, okay, well, I mean, the good thing is once you're into sort of smartphone territory, there's an app for almost anything that you want to do. So you'll be able to experiment with all sorts of things. But
pray till the cows come on then.
Yeah, I mean these are not cheap phones. So you know make sure if you get a phone like that it's insured. Also, if you do, John, if you do take the plunge and you spend a significant amount of cash on a smartphone, then
£200 or £300.
Yeah. So get it. I mean, if you were going to get an iPhone, I mean, if you're not sighted, I would say that a good choice of phone in the iPhone range would be an iPhone SE. Because the iPhone SEs, they're the smaller phones, physically smaller, but they've got, you know, all the power that you need to run, you know, all the modern apps and the modern operating system and so forth. And if you don't need a large screen, then, you know, why pay for one, as it were? That's the most affordable iPhone. But having said that, iPhones aren't cheap.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
No, but you can get them, I think, for sort of 300 and 400, 300 and something and 400.
Still not cheap. And by the way, that Doro, you're right, is a Swedish company. John, thanks a lot for the call.
Across the UK, this is BBC Five Live. Up all night with Dotton Adebayo.
Yeah, Fevzi Turkalp is with us, our gadget detective. This morning, if you'd like to join in the conversation, we're asking him all your questions about techie problems to do with your mobile phone, your computer, your telly, your radio, etc., etc., etc. Give him a call. The number to call is 0808 590 9693. We've got Billy in Northern Ireland with us, Fevzi. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning.
Morning, Billy.
Morning. A question, just I have an HP on a Vista platform,
yeah.
And I've been told the computer's crashed on me, and I've been told that it's the graphics card that is faulty. And I'm wondering, is there a way I can retrieve the information from the hard drive without going through an expensive process of having a third party retrieve it for me?
Yeah. So are you of the view that this machine is not an economic repair? You're not going to get it up and running again.
No, the new graphics card costs more than a new computer.
Yeah. Okay. All right then.
So
there are ways in which you can get that information out, but it does need a certain amount of technical know-how and. If the information on the hard drive is, you know, precious to you, either in monetary terms or other terms, then it can be worth spending sort of £50 to get someone to transfer that
right.
data safely. If you wanted to do it yourself, is it the case that this computer doesn't boot up at all? It doesn't start up and can't.
No, it just doesn't boot up at all.
So the way to do it would be to extract the internal hard drive from this, and sometimes that can be quite easy or not. It depends on the design of the machine. Sometimes it's as easy as a couple of screws and out it slides, as it were. But sometimes you have to, you know, take off the back and, you know, ferret around inside the computer.
Right.
Once you've got that drive out, you would then buy a little caddy that might cost you, say, £10, that converts the connection type, which will be probably a SATA connector. That's a type of connector of the hard drive. That's how the hard drive connects to the computer. You put it in a little caddy, it slides in, and then it becomes an external USB drive. And although won't be able to use it, I mean, I'm assuming the hard drive is still working because you're telling me it was the graphics card.
Well, I presume it is because it's just the graphics card.
And it probably is, but just be aware that sometimes one fault can lead to another. But in all likelihood, some or all of the data is still there. So you would pop out the card, put it in a caddy that allows you to treat it as a USB external drive. You then plug it as an external drive into the USB socket of a working computer and copy across the data. Ignore the operating system because you're not relying on Windows Vista to start up again. All you're saying is, in addition to all those operating system files, are my precious photos or my manuscript that I've been working on for 12 years, whatever it is, you can copy those files across onto a new computer. And by the way, for those running Vista or earlier as well, Vista is no longer a supported operating system by Microsoft.
No, I realize that. The new one I have is a TAR, and it's Windows 12.
Windows 10.
10, sorry.
Yeah. If you're running Windows 10, 12, I'd be quite interested in that, Billy. But I'll pay you good money to have a look at Windows 12. I think that would be the way to do it. Now, if you say, well, you know, it'd be nice to have the data, but I don't really want to spend, you know, a lot, you know, it doesn't matter if I lose it, then fair enough, have a crack at it yourself. It's quite an instructive thing to do. However, if there are sort of family photos of, you know, that are irreplaceable or anything like that.
Well, it's just the manuscript. I was more worried about the manuscript. The family photographs.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no,
but
exactly.
But the manuscript, you know, but you've been working on it for years.
But it is amazing how many of us have got, you know, really precious things on our hard drives and no backups.
No backup. Yeah.
And no meaningful backup. Yeah. By that I mean...
We will learn, though, eventually, because it's not a question of... if, but when?
Yeah,
isn't it?
Hard drives do fail.
Yeah,
and they will, even SSDs, you know, the solid state ones, will eventually
even when you
fail.
Don't use them. And Billy, thank you very much for the call. Oh, this question, well, it's not a question. This statement says, it starts off, can Fevzi help?
Dotton, what do you think?
It's a simple binary question, yes or no.
I can help.
Right, okay. Well, we'll come back to that question in a moment or two, don't worry. Brian in Rashfarnham in Dublin says, to the environmentally unsound Dotton, I suppose that's me.
It's not me, is it?
You don't have to stick it to me that badly. Anyway, to the environmentally unsound Dotton, can you please ask the environmentally sound Fevzi if there will ever be a Windows 11 or will they just continue to create updates for Windows 10 indefinitely, as you've just been talking with Billy about?
I think it will be Windows 10 for a long time. So, we had Windows 7, Windows 8. There was no Windows 9, funny enough. In the same way that there's no iPhone 9. We've got an iPhone 8 and an iPhone 10 around the corner, but no iPhone. Yeah, I think, and I mean, I think the best analogy for this was what was known as Mac OS 10, which went on for years and then was given names of sort of, you know, Lion, Mountain Lion, all of this. It will probably go on for a long time because the way in which Microsoft are viewing Windows 10 is different to other operating systems. So they're essentially, when you get Windows 10, you're effectively saying, I accept that Microsoft are going to take over the management of this operating system and they will stream updates to you without you necessarily even knowing it or asking for them. For goodness sake, a lot of people got Windows 10 foisted upon them without them even wanting it. And they will just do that. And there are benefits to them in doing that because they're changing their business model. It used to be that Microsoft made their money by selling you a new version of the operating system, you know, and they charge, you know, a lot of money for, Windows XP as opposed to Windows 98 SE or whatever it was. They'd be making a lot of money. But unfortunately for them, the world has changed. You know, Google's Android is, in quotes, free. Apple doesn't charge separately for its iOS operating system. So all these mobile platforms suddenly have operating systems that don't appear to have a charge for them. Of course, nothing is really free. And in the case of, say, Android, it's basically a data collection device for Google. They use it to learn a lot about you. That's why they give away this operating system. And in a similar way, Microsoft, who spent many years poking at Google for collecting data on its users, is now doing exactly the same thing. And Microsoft Windows 10 is this operating system, which is, you know, one of the most sort of spying pieces of software that you'll ever run on any device. You know, in the form when you first get a machine with Windows 10 on it, your machine will be effectively leaking information about you to Microsoft at every turn. And a lot of features like Cortana, which is their equivalent of Siri, you know, this voice entity that lives, this you know, disembodied intelligence that lives inside your computer. All of these things won't even work unless you give it information about your location. So, yes, it will stay Windows 10 for quite a while.
Okay. John in South Wales is with us. Good morning, John.
Hello, Dalton. How's it going?
It's going very well, thank you. Good to meet you.
Okay. And you too.
Yeah, you've got Fevzi with you. Yeah, let's not waste his time, you know, John, because he charges by the... Is it by the gigabyte that you charge, Fevzi?
I'm actually very cheap,
as is my advice.
Yeah, nothing comes cheap. No such thing as a cheap techie guy. You know what I mean, John?
Yeah, definitely.
John, how can I help?
Okay, about 10 months ago, I bought a Samsung phone, brand new.
Yeah.
Only the shop sells all their phones brand new out of the box. And when I then, about a month or more ago, went to unlock the phone via the shop I bought it with, they said the phone's unlocked, but I haven't had the phone unlocked. That should be locked. So I phoned Samsung, and they say you've got an Italian phone. The IME code and the serial number is destined for the Italian market. So I was like, how's that then? Well, it's for Italian. It's an Italian phone. But when I opened the phone up, it's got the EE symbol in it. So I'm confused as to why, and I can't get a straight answer, because if I talk to the people on the phone, they say one thing. Then I go in the shop, they say another thing. So I'm just wondering, is that possible? Have you heard of this before, or how would you explain it? Or
so at the moment we're all in the EU, obviously, and it's, you know, it's a single market, and you know, devices like that do get brought in. You know, from other markets, sometimes they're known as grey imports.
Parallel imports, yeah.
Yeah, parallel imports, grey imports. Sometimes this is not a problem. I mean, is it giving you a particular problem? You said that the phone is already unlocked. That's not generally a bad thing in and of itself, although it may be a clue to its history. But is the fact that it's, in quotes, an Italian phone, is that causing you any issues at the moment? Is there something that you're particularly worried about in that sense?
Well, just the fact that I can't understand, because when I talk to Samsung, they are definite that the phone is supposed to go to Italy. It shouldn't be in this country. So as far as their marketing is concerned,
it wouldn't
put serial numbers on a phone and then send it to Britain.
Yeah, I understand. Are they saying, therefore, that there's no valid warranty on it from the manufacturer, for example?
Well,
have they mentioned the warranty?
It depends on who I speak to. Because I phone different shops up, because they got different Samsung Experience shops.
Yeah.
And some of them are saying there might be an issue with the phone, because it's in Italian and it's in Britain now, because the warranty doesn't transfer. So I don't know until I take the phone in if there is an issue or not, because it's just 12 months old now, so the warranty's for 2 years. And there are some strange things on the phone that happen. It's like if I phone up and I got a keypad number, you know, you got a selection. When I go to touch the phone, it blacks out. When I take my hand away, it comes alive on the screen. So I don't know if that's a problem. Then I stroke the phone, and then I've got to be really quick, so it comes back upright. And then if I go to touch it again, it'll black out again. It'll go dark.
Right.
You know, like if you put it to your ear. I'm not putting it to my ear because I'm looking at it.
Right.
So,
okay.
And it does some other strange things as well. It like brings up pages. I don't know why it brings up pages.
Okay. Right, John. Look, I think the thing is this: you've obviously got some concerns about the phone in the way that you've just described to me. And I asked you, well, you know, are they saying you've got a warranty or not? So the thing to do is to try and call upon the warranty to, first of all, speak to the people who sold you the phone and ask them, you know, how they would set about solving, you know, the issues that you've described. Let's see, and why don't you float with them? You know, if they can't offer you an instant fix, why don't you say, well, let's take advantage of the warranty and either ask them to do it or make a warranty claim yourself. You will then soon determine whether or not you have a valid warranty, because you said you think it should be a two-year warranty. If you find that you can make a warranty claim, all well and good. If you find that you cannot, then that's then a basis to go back to the retailer and say, hold on, I thought I was buying a phone that was properly warrantied. That being of, you know, from the Italian market doesn't in and of itself make it, you know, illegal to be sold. I mean, there are, you know, there are supermarkets that import jeans from other markets because they're cheaper and sell them here, and there's not generally a problem. But the manufacturers don't like it, but it's not illegal, and in fact, trying to stop it may be deemed to be illegal. So I think you need to, first of all, you need to get a fix for the problems that you're suffering, but then also you need to put your mind at rest or otherwise to find out whether you've been disadvantaged by the provenance of that phone, the fact that it's, you know, was meant to be sold and used in the Italian market. Is that giving you some disadvantage? If you're suffering by it, then I think you've got a basis upon which to go back to the retailer and you know, seek redress, and that might be your money back.
John, thank you. Appreciate that call. Steve in Bristol is with us as well. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, both.
How are you?
Hi, Steve.
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
I was going to go back to the point from a couple of calls ago about the guy talking about Windows 12 or Windows 10. As we know it.
Yeah. My heart beats every time someone says Windows 12. Stop teasing me so, Steve, you know.
My apologies. You know, I still run Windows 7.
Yeah.
Which works absolutely perfectly for me.
Yeah.
I've never been what they call an early adopter.
Yeah.
Of upgrades, because I think it will take them a while to get it sorted out. But this still works perfectly fine for me. Is there any reason at all for me to even look at upgrading to Windows 10?
Not at the moment. I mean, the majority of the machines that I run, I have a choice of whatever operating system I want to run on it. You know, I have access to all those operating systems. The majority of systems I run are Windows 7. I do run Windows 10 machines, not least because I need to know about Windows 10. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't bother even with one Windows 10 installation. That's not to say there's anything wrong with it. And bear in mind that, you know, for the average consumer, when you buy a new Windows machine, it's going to come with Windows 10. You know, just because of, you know, that's what they put on it. But if it's doing everything that you want, then leave it alone. As long as Microsoft are continuing to patch it from a security point of view, and we've mentioned that Windows XP and more recently Windows Vista stopped being supported.
Well, they, as far as I know, they are still patching Windows 7.
Yeah, oh no, and they are, and they will do for some time to come. So there's absolutely no reason for most people to switch over, and I would say that actually there's quite a lot of reason not to, because Windows 10, although it has some benefits, most of that sort of stability that you can get with Windows 10 comes on machines that actually come with Windows 10 in the first place. Machines that are upgraded from Windows 7 to 10, yes, they can work and they can be fine, but often you get compatibility issues. You know, the drivers don't quite work correctly. Those are the bits of software that, you know, enable all the components in your computer to work seamlessly with the new operating system.
Yeah, I mean, so, I know people who had more recent Windows 8 machines, yeah, who took the automatic upgrade to Windows 10,
yes,
when that was available,
yeah,
and they've had nightmares with it.
Well, I mean, I've been critical of Microsoft for making it so easy to upgrade from an earlier operating system to 10. So upgrading an operating system is like giving a computer a heart and lung transplant. It's not a small thing to do, and it's something that needs to be thought out. And what people need to do before they upgrade from one operating system to another is they need to think about compatibility, for example. So if you're running maybe some quite old software, maybe an old accounting suite or something like that, which is critical to your business, for example, but may run on 7 but may not run on 10, then you need to know. Similarly, if your printer's not going to work properly under Windows 10, you need to know. So you need to do, and there are some good tools out there to check, you know, for compatibility issues. And sometimes it says incompatible or compatible or works but not supported or something like that. So I would say a lot of stuff stops working when you go from 7 to 10, not huge amounts, but it can be critical things. And that can be hardware or software. So if it's working, if you're happy under Windows 7, it's working, it's stable, if we're going to say, leave it alone. You know, if you want to be a geek and play with it, then do it, but don't do it on a system that you rely upon. Yep. So in a similar way, I have an iPad that I don't rely upon. I upgraded that to iOS 11. Did I do that with my iPhone? No, I didn't. Because I need that to work reliably, and I don't think that's a stable operating system yet. So in a similar way, I would not upgrade from Windows 7. I don't really see it as an upgrade other than numerically. Until such time as you have a problem, and typically that will be when Microsoft stops supporting it, then it's time to go to a more recent operating system. And in a similar way, you know, a lot of people, when they stopped getting Windows XP supported, didn't jump to 10. A lot of them found a way of jumping to 7, and preferred it. So no need to do it. If you buy a new machine, it'll have it on there, and you don't need to do anything about that. But yeah, I wouldn't be upgrading your machine at the moment.
I wish I hadn't upgraded from the Apple Mac Classic to the 2SI in those days, which was the king of the moment. Anyway, thank you for the call, Steve, in Bristol. And David in Thailand is with us. David, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hello, David.
Can hear you loud and clear. A little bit of a delay on the line, but that's all good. Yeah, you got a question for Fevzi, haven't you? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, great. Yep, where I am, it's hot and sunny. And I listen to you as I'm tapping away on my computer in the mornings here. The second thing is, Dotton, will you please say your telephone number more slowly and clearly? I never can pick it up.
I'm sorry.
First time I've ever phoned into a radio program, okay? Right, Pepsi, I've got a Samsung S3 smartphone, old now.
Yep.
It had 16 gigs of space on it, usable 12 gigs. It slowly filled itself up. I know it goes horribly slow. It says it's full. There's a red bar when I try to connect it to the computer saying you're full. I tried everything to empty the memory. I've deleted apps I don't use. I've deleted all my emails. I've only got about 100 photos on there. It tells me I'm only using about 2 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
It says I filled 12. I think you covered this somehow last week, but I missed it. I caught the tail end of it.
I understand. So, David, do you know if you've upgraded the version of Android, that's to say the operating system that your phone is running? Have you gone to a more recent version than the version it shipped with?
I'm pretty certain I have, because my service provider here, sometimes when I go in and pay my contract on it, they actually say, oh, you haven't installed the upgrades. And they go, and they do something.
Yeah.
So I can't be certain I've installed 100%, but
no.
Certainly, yes, I have. I have upgraded since I bought the phone about 3 years ago.
Okay, and that will mean that whilst you might get new features and you might get new security updates, which can be important, sometimes newer versions of the operating system are more taxing on the device than the older one. And that's not a problem if you've got a brand new device, but if you've got one that's knocking on a bit, it can just mean that a device goes from being, you know, quick and agile to being slow and, you know, unbearably so. So it can be that. Sometimes it's possible to roll back, but it can be a bit of an issue. What I would do, are you backing up that phone at all onto another device such as a computer?
I'm not backing up on it. Well, yeah. sometimes I attach it to my computer and take off, like, you know, I had hundreds of photos on there, so I took all the photos off. And I don't use music. I don't use film downloads. I don't do anything smart like that. I run a couple of email accounts, and obviously things like, well, Skype or things, although I haven't got Skype on there at the moment. The thing is, it's telling me there's 12 gigs being used.
Yeah, yeah. And it's amazing how much sort of cruft... I'm sorry, David, I interrupt you. I beg your pardon. So it's amazing how much sort of cruft these. It's a bit like lint. Where does it really come from? Who knows? But it sort of accumulates. What I would say is this. Do a complete backup. Do two of them. Make sure that you've got everything and make sure that you can restore it. Once you've done that and you're confident you can get everything back when you need to, reset it to factory settings. Go back to how it shipped as far as you can and then reinstate those groups of files, you know, one at a time perhaps, and put your photos back on it or whatever else you want to do. But also when you've done that, just see if it's now running properly as soon as you've reinstated it, and it's in that sort of virgin state.
David, thank you very much. It's a real honor to get a first time caller. And also, let me say this slowly enough: 0808 590 9693 is our number.
First for news and the best live sport. This is BBC Five Live. Up all night with Dotton Adebayo.
So, enough all night this morning. We've got another 25 minutes or so of our techie phone in to go if you'd like to join in. If you've got a question for our gadget detective, Fawzi Turkup, then you simply pick up the phone and give us a call on 0808 590 9693. And I apologise, I don't mean to be patronising or anything like that, but our last caller, David in Thailand, did point out that I read it out too fast, and I'll try and measure the tempo of my voice as I read it out. So apologies. And feel free to criticise me at any time. I mean, Fevzy always does. He doesn't hold back at all, does he?
Don't, only when you're on air.
Yeah, especially when I compare him to Donald Trump, which he's still got the hump about, no doubt. Let's speak to Gerson, though, in Cambridge. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hello.
How are you?
Yeah. Fine, thank you.
Good. Yeah, got a question for Fawzi. Go ahead.
Yes, what's happening is I got a 70-inch Mac Pro and for a couple of years now, but suddenly I just was not allowed to log in into the PC, so I got a white screen. And so I went to Apple shop and they can do nothing because they said to me it's a vintage computer. So they can touch that. So, and I was looking at the internet to go to a company and I send it to get the computer repaired. And they come out to the assessment and was graphic cards need to be changed. And they are called about £300 plus VAT over a new motherboard. So I'm just wondering if it's worth or not. But it's very rare to get this computer now. And I like the size of the screen because it allowed me work with the different spreadsheets, different windows open, and I cannot get, is there a way to get a 70-inch laptop a Mac? So I just wonder, any advice, get a repair, or just get a new one?
So let me just make sure I caught all of that. Did you say the machine was a Mac Pro or a MacBook Pro?
It's a Mac Pro, yes, a Mac Pro. Yeah.
So is it one of the cylindrical ones, the newer ones of those? Okay, and that would have cost you a lot of money. How much did you spend on that?
They just come out with a quote for the get the graphics.
No, initially, when you bought it, how much did it cost you, Justin?
Oh, when I bought it, just over £1,000. Yeah,
over £1,000. But how old is this machine?
It's early 2011.
Early 2011. Okay, so this is not one of the cylindrical Mac Pros. This is one of the cheese grater Mac Pros, the big aluminium boxes, yeah?
Oh, yes, yeah, correct.
Okay, those are nice machines, by the way, but sort of style icons, those machines. Mm, there's a market just for the cases alone. You know, people make furniture out of them. 2011, it's one of those sort of borderline areas. I mean, this... £350.
Yeah,
it's difficult because you see the problem is even when you replace that graphic circuit, the rest of the machine is still, you know, a 6-year-old machine. If anything else goes wrong on it, it won't be warranted either. Which version of the operating system are you currently running?
Just the latest one, Sierra.
Yeah, Sierra. Okay.
And this one, it used to run perfectly. I just got problems with the graphic card.
This is a bit like, you know, when we have an aging car and we sometimes spend more on it than the actual machine is worth.
That's
you know, an insurance company might write it off, but we decide we'd like to keep it because it's less upheaval and we like the machine. If £350, I think £350 is at that level where I would start to think about putting it towards a new machine. And it would it necessarily need to be a Mac for you? I mean, would you consider, for example, using a Windows PC?
I would use a Mac. That was one of the reasons. But yeah.
You're a Mac baby, aren't you? You're a Mac baby.
Yeah, yeah. So
you wouldn't necessarily need to go for a Mac Pro, bearing in mind that, you know, any of the desktop machines, be they iMacs or even a Mac Mini, a modern one of those would outperform your Mac Pro in most respects. Are you doing anything that's particularly sort of taxing on the graphical side? Is there a reason why you've got a Mac Pro as opposed to a sort of less fully featured Mac?
No. The reason it was just always it was in love with Mac, I got this one for ages, and it's just like the computer, so it's got like the same value for me.
I understand. Well, at £350, I personally would be inclined to put that towards a new Mac if I want either a new one or one that Apple have got refurbished units that they sell as well through their store. And the good thing about Apple refurbs is that they're virtually indistinguishable from new. They're fully warrantied and they always look new. I think in a lot of cases they replace the outer casing and all of that, and it's fully tested and fully warrantied, and it tends to be about 15% cheaper than one off there. Also, just be aware, if you're a student, you qualify for a student discount as well. So that's something to bear in mind. If you are a student or you know a student who can buy one for you, then that's something to think about as well. But at £350,
what are you going to do, Jason?
Deal
or no deal?
deal. I think I will invest in a new, probably get a new Mac,
Yeah. I don't buy a new Mac Pro, though, because frankly, they launched the Mac Pro. They made a big deal about how it was made in America. It had, graphics cards in it that could be replaced and so forth, and then proceeded not to upgrade it for, I think, more than 3 years now. It hasn't seen an upgrade. And now it's in the embarrassing position of being outperformed by iMacs and even Mac Minis in some cases. I mean, it's just
shocking.
It really is disappointing, because people who have spent £3,000-£5,000 on one of those machines and then find that it's not quite a doorstop, but it's just not getting updated in the way that it should be. I think that's disappointing. So I would say, if you're going to buy another Mac, consider an iMac, which has the integrated screen. Or if you don't want an integrated screen, then consider a Mac Mini. And by the way, if you look at a Mac Mini that goes back to 2012, which obviously is a long time ago, newer than yours, the 2012 models can have quad-core processors in them, and therefore, because the new Mac Minis, Apple hate me for saying this, and they're not going to
say it anyway.
When they released the new Mac Minis, they did a number of things that I thought was quite cynical. First of all, they soldered the memory chips down so that you could no longer upgrade the RAM.
Right.
And Apple charge a pretty penny for their RAM memory. So what people used to do is they'd get the 4 gigabyte machine and upgrade it to 16.
So you couldn't use any expansion cards there.
Don't be like that. So it is, but it's true. You've got to, when I spoke about the PC spec and I said get one that's 8 gigabytes but expandable, Apple started soldering it in. They started making it hard to change the hard drive, and they stopped doing quad-core processors.
We've got a lot of calls, and I want to get through all these calls tonight. So, Jason, thank you very much. Robert in Glasgow, first of all, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a first-time caller as well.
Really appreciate the call in that case. Really do.
My wee daughter, April, I got her a Sony Xperia a couple of years ago, and I'm not very technical with stuff. And I bought her a new iPhone, and she gave me the Sony Xperia.
Yep.
And see the voice recorder thing?
Yep.
On the phone. I accidentally put it in a dustbin, she told me. Is there any way that I could get that voice recorder back?
Okay, so you accidentally deleted it, just for those that are listening. You didn't put the phone in the dustbin, just the app went into the trash can, as it were. With that phone, you can download all manner of voice recorders, either that one or another one from a third party. You can do that. So the Xperia runs a version of Google's Android operating system. If you access the Google Play Store, which is the online store or shop where you can download new apps, then you can choose from any number of voice recorders there. And that some of them will have a lot more features than the one that you accidentally deleted. It will be possible also to reinstate that particular app, but it might be an opportunity to sort of acquaint yourself with the App Store and have a look at what's available there, because one of the benefits of owning a smartphone, Robert, is that you can choose programs that will do almost anything that you want. There's a huge number of apps to choose from, so not just sort of games and things, but if there's things that you specifically want to do with your phone, then you can do it. And it's possible, you talk about a voice recorder, it's possible to have one that will allow you not only to record voices but to edit them, change them, tidy them up. You can have a full recording studio on your phone these days, for example.
I used to take it to Celtic Park with me, mm-hmm. and record all the fans all singing. Yep. And I've lost all that as well.
You've lost the recordings. Okay. Well, that's a bit tougher.
Well, it is, because Celtic haven't lost many matches at Celtic Park, and yet you've lost the recordings. It's tough.
I know. They call it a smartphone, but I'm not very smart. I'm not.
Robert,
it's easy. Don't take that view. Easily done, and smartphones are not as smart as they think they are.
The criticism should be about the person who designed the phone to not tell you, you are now dumping it in the dustbin. Don't! Whatever you do, don't do that! That person ain't so smart if they didn't put a gadget like that in there.
Yeah.
I done it by mistake. I didn't know I'd done it. Yeah. April told me I'd done that.
Yeah.
Robert, do you use a computer of any sort other than the smartphone? Do you have like a laptop or a desktop computer?
Or a calculator?
I can't use a computer. And okay. It takes all my time to use a calculator as well.
The thing that I'm sort of thinking as we speak about this is that it is easy to delete things by accident, and it's also, eventually that phone may break down or develop a fault, and you could lose things on there that are valuable. So let's say you use it to make recordings. You've got to have a way of getting those recordings off that device, even if these ones aren't recoverable. You're going to start making recordings. You might shoot some video or take some photos. You need to be able to copy those across. Yeah,
have a backup.
You need to You need to find a way to do a backup. That could be what's called a cloud backup. So in other words, if the information isn't very private,
it's just recordings. And singing and that.
So one option for you would be to back that up into what's called the cloud, which is effectively.
I'm writing that down as you speak.
Yeah. Well,
you say that Google Play Store. Do you need to be on the internet to get that?
You can access it from the phone itself.
Yeah.
So you will be on the internet, but that you need to be able to, access the internet from that phone, either using Wi-Fi or if your mobile phone. I'm sorry.
There's Wi-Fi on this phone.
Wi-Fi on the phone, and also if you're the company that you have the SIM card from, if they've given you a data allocation, you can do it via that as well. But Wi-Fi would be the best way. But for Wi-Fi to work, you've got to attach to a Wi-Fi system, and I'm guessing you don't have Wi-Fi in your home. So then you'd be going and logging onto a public Wi-Fi, be it in a library or a coffee shop or, you know, something like that. And then you can access the Google Play Store, and that's a revelation. Take some time to just look around and see what's available there. A lot of it is free, but just be careful when you start downloading apps. Don't download any apps that are brand new, and only download apps that have got a lot of reviews and a lot of good reviews, going back a long time.
Yeah, and also another thing, and I'm not suggesting that I'm smarter than Fevzi. You can decide for yourself, Robert, but what I do when I record things or have some things that I don't want to lose is I somehow forward them to myself by email. If you've got an email account, then you just press forward to email on that smartphone of yours, and bingo, you've got it saved on your email, so to speak. So you don't need to go up into the clouds because the clouds is somewhere, it's not tangible, whereas your email is very tangible, isn't it? You can just press there, and there it is if you want it.
And a lot of smartphones that aren't made by Apple have got memory card slots in them.
Oh.
So it's also possible to put a micro SD card into those. Those are little memory cards that are about the size of the fingernail on your little finger.
And those memory cards, as you've already suggested, are the equivalent of expansion cards, so boom, boom. Andrew in Lincolnshire.
And so we come full circle.
Exactly. I've enjoyed tonight. Andrew in Lincolnshire, and thanks for the call, Robert. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Dalton. Good morning, Fedzi. My question is simply, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and she's starting the GCSE syllabus for the exams in the forthcoming year or so.
Yeah.
I'm looking for a laptop. She tells me she actually needs a laptop. I'm looking for a make, a cost, and what specification we should be looking for.
Did you mind if I just say something very quickly, Fevzi? You're the expert, okay? You are the expert. Fevzi's the expert, but can I just say this? Because, you know, I've got a daughter who's now 16 and everything, but when they were at that stage and they said they needed a laptop, you'll find that it's not just any laptop, but it's the one that all their school friends have got.
Yeah, so the dearest one.
Exactly. So on your head be it. On your head be it. Fevzi, over to you.
Okay.
I need some good advice.
Andrew, do you have a particular budget in mind for this?
I haven't really.
No.
She has an iPad and an iPhone, but this is for the syllabus, and she tells me that it is necessary to have a laptop, really.
So... either a Windows laptop or a MacBook.
I think hearing her saying she's got an iPhone and an iPad gives you a clue which way she wants to go, Fevzi.
Yeah, except that you need to check with the school to see if she needs to be able to run particular software on it. They may expect a Windows machine. So before you lay out the cash, and you can actually corroborate the claim that she needs one. She probably does, actually. And good though iPads are, and more capable though they've become with the latest iOS 11 operating system, for most uses they are not still they're still not a full replacement for everything that laptop can do. But you know, investigate and ask the school, you know, would an iPad be up to the job, because it might be, or is there particular software it needs to run that an iPad cannot run and needs to run Windows? Let's assume for the moment we're going to go with a Windows machine because she's already got the iPad. Mac choices are actually fewer and therefore easier to choose from. So let's talk about Windows machines. So earlier in the program, I talked about some of the specs for a good laptop, which is, you know, something like an Intel i5 processor, a minimum of 8 gigabytes of RAM, make sure it's got a solid state drive as opposed to a mechanical drive in there, with a capacity of at least 250 or 256 gigabytes. Yeah, if it's 500 odd, so much the better.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned screen size. Now, if she's going to be carrying this to school and from class to class, I would say one with a slightly smaller screen, so something like a 13-inch screen would probably be optimal.
Yep.
The reason for that, a couple of reasons for that. One is it makes the machine lighter. Two, the bigger the screen, the more battery it draws, and therefore the battery life will tend to suffer on ones with bigger screens, or they have bigger batteries built into them, which makes them heavier still.
Uh-huh.
And battery life is important because, you know, in a sort of school setting and in a college setting, it's not always easy to get to a charge point, and you don't want it letting you down when you know. So you need something with essentially all day battery life. Now be aware that most manufacturers lie to you about how many hours it will do on a battery, but you know, so Apple are usually quite reasonably accurate, but some of the others are not, so they might say to you, you get 8 hours and you might get 5. So, you know, you need to try and get one with a very good battery life on it so that she's got a good chance of getting through the whole day without worrying about constantly charging it up. So I would say an ultra notebook computer. So look at, for example, if you're looking at Windows, look at, say, a Dell XPS 13.
Uh-huh.
That's got the same sort of build quality as a Mac, not as expensive, a bit more upgradable, and a bit cheaper as well. And
what sort of cost are we talking about?
It depends on the configuration, but I would say sort of 700-ish, maybe more, depending on the spec that you go for. You don't need to go, you know, for everything.
You sounded so depressed when Fevzi mentioned the money, Andrew. I mean, it's your daughter we're talking about now. Come on. You should be leaping for joy. Well, yes!
I think the best bit of advice you've given me is actually contact the school and
see... That's a good one, I never thought of that. That's genius,
that is
actually
the most important, perhaps, to start with,
Yeah, because also there may be requirements now, and those requirements may change in say, the next year or two as she progresses through her school career. So,
thank you for that.
I think you need to do that, because you might also find that she might not like this, but that the iPad might be good enough for now. And actually that has the advantage of all-day battery life and lightweight.
Tell her that Fevzi said that, and it wasn't your idea, by the way, Andrew. And thanks for the call, by the way. Toby in Buckinghamshire. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Toby.
Hello. All right. I have a late 11 MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Similar to one of the previous callers.
Jason, yeah.
I've been using it faultless, and all of a sudden it froze. You get a little spinning rainbow, as it was.
Yeah.
I tried to reboot the machine, and basically it failed to load up into the OS several times. I rang Apple support.
Mm-hmm.
They're very helpful. They particularly thought it was a bad sectors on the hard drive.
Yeah.
But because of the age of the machine, they don't carry any parts for that machine because of the age.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to take it to one of their approved repairers.
Yes.
I took it to a repairer, one of their approved repairers, for a free evaluation. A couple of days later, I got a phone call from them saying that it was basically beyond economical repair.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised to hear that? Yeah.
They say that basically it was the bad sectors on the hard drive plus the graphics card, had basically broken, but because the graphics card was part of the motherboard, you'd need to replace the motherboard, and the motherboards are no longer available for my device. So basically, they class it as uneconomical to repair.
Well, it sounds like impossible to repair if they can't get the motherboard.
Well, they probably can on eBay, couldn't they? They probably
My other problem is, I do have a backup. I do regularly back up the machine.
Yeah.
But here's the but: because of the cost of a new machine, obviously I've had to buy but I needed one sooner than later.
Yeah.
I've had to buy a Windows machine, and obviously you can't restore a backup from an OS onto Windows.
No, not really, not legally, because I mean there are things that can be done to run, you know.
So I understand that you can run a dual operating system and all that stuff, but
Apple don't give a license to anyone to run their operating system other than their own hardware. So you can you can run Windows legally on a Mac, but you can't run Mac OS legally on a Windows PC.
Yeah, it's obviously, but
what do you mean legally? I don't get the legally bit.
Technically, you can do it.
Yeah.
There are devices.
Yeah, but you won't be taken to court if you do it. It's not a criminal offence, is it?
It's
legal.
It's pirate software. I mean,
I got you.
You know, people run things called hackintoshes, which are hacked PCs that run like Macs and so forth. And I couldn't recommend that to you because that's not legal.
Right, yeah. Very quickly, can you help with Toby? So we've only got a minute.
Toby, look, quickly, are you convinced that it's not just the hard drive? Because in a way, sometimes it's unusual for it to be hard drive and motherboard and graphics forth.
Well, my other problem is, just quickly, my external hard drive that it's backed up on, the only port on the back of the hard drive is a FireWire connection, which was popular for the Macs.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand.
But basically, I couldn't find a PC that had that connection. And a FireWire to USB lead, I'm told, does not exist.
Okay, you've got 30 seconds, Fevzi.
Okay, look, I think the thing is this. We need to get more quotes from people as to, you know, more opinions as to the repairability of that machine. If it was just the hard drive, it would be an excellent opportunity to swap out that old hard drive for an SSD, spend a minute of money and do it that way. If the motherboard is really genuinely shot, as opposed to what one person has told you, then that's not an economic
and
repair.
I'm sorry to bring it to a crashing end, but thank you, Toby. And Fevzi, can't thank you enough.
BBC Five Live.